Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Spiritual Hollywood Hour. I am your host, Kate Romero, and I want to give some gratitude over to BBS Radio, Don Newsom and Douglas Newsom, and Seth Hendrick for all of the extraordinary work they're doing with BBS Radio and the difference they're making everywhere through the airwaves. I have with me this evening someone I'm very, very excited about. His name is Gay Hendrix, and he is the author of the new book, The Big Leap. And it's to conquer your hidden fear and take life to the next level. I've been reading this book, and it is so inspiring that I can hardly wait to get started in this interview. And if you'd like to pull up Gay's website, it's www.hendricks.com. And tonight's topic is, are you ready to take the big leap? So I'll give you a bit of background about the big leap. And it says, will you make your big leap? Here's the bottom line. We have an inner thermostat that determines the amount of love and success that we allow ourselves. Boy, is that ever true. And when we exceed our setting, we tend to sabotage ourselves so that we can return to the old familiar zone where we feel safe and secure. The thermostat was set before you could think for yourself, usually in early childhood. There's good news. If you can consciously reset your thermostat and go all the way to your full measure of success in love and money, the big leap shows you how. Here's what's in the book, Preparing for Your Big Leap, The One Problem and How to Solve It. Making the leap, dismantling the foundation of the problem. Getting specific, how to spot the upper limit problem in daily life. Building a new home in your zone of genius. Living in your zone of genius, using the ultimate success mantra to thrive in love, abundance, and creativity. Living in Einstein time, creating time for the full expression of your genius. Solving the relationship problem, transcending the upper limits of love and appreciation. Plus, lots, lots more. Wherever you are in your journey, I invite you to make your big leap into your zone of genius, and there's a whole new world waiting for you there. So, if that isn't enticing enough for you, I just want to bring on Gay Hendrix to tell you all about this himself. I guess you're many masters. Without further ado, I'd like to bring on Gay Hendrix. Hello, Gay. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Kate. It's great to be with you.
Thank you. I'm very, very excited about this book. Number one, the book cover is so compelling that it speaks for itself. It's a picture of a small goldfish bowl and a large goldfish bowl with a small jumping out of the small one into the big one. And it is a lot like that to gain the confidence, trust, and faith, and actually self-love to break through the glass ceiling to a level of your greatness that you've never experienced before, isn't it?
Yes, it's really exhilarating. And I've had the experience now, not only in my own life, but in doing it with thousands of people over the years and seeing it happen, and it always moves me. It's always the most exciting thing to see when people come out from underneath the cloud cover of their old programming and invent something brand new in their lives and step into that zone of genius. It's very exciting to be with.
Yeah, I can only imagine. And you've got such a wide, vast body of work, and you know, it's just amazing how you've heard your calling and you've used your own technology and your own philosophy to sustain where you are and to keep breaking through your own limitations to get to your own big leap, you know, on a regular basis is what it seems like to me.
Yes, well, I've been really thinking about human potential for as long as I can remember, pretty much. And so it's something I think about all the time, is how can we maximize our experience here and how can we open up to more love. Even when I was a kid, I remember, you know, watching the family interactions very carefully and kind of figuring out how people were communicating in such a way that created problems and how they might be able to communicate differently. And even though usually when I made a suggestion to them, they didn't like it very much, you know, because
right.
They didn't like some 10-year-old making psychological observations on them. But it felt like something I had to do.
I hear you. I know for myself, in first grade, I was on the playground during recess doing life coaching. I had people lined up telling me about their families, and I basically was more of a listener than a talker. And the fact that you were doing that at 10 years old was definitely telling of what your future would be. And I just want to share something with you just to get it out of my space, because I really love to just say what I'm present to when I'm speaking to a guest. And I just want to honor you as much as I can, because you certainly have earned it and you deserve it. My mom passed away last Tuesday, and I really wish she would have had a book like this to use as a blueprint for her life. She would have been so much happier. She raised 7 kids by herself, and I was the middle child, and I watched her so strong, and just really, if she'd had some direction like this, it would have made all the difference for her life. She would have been 80 on August 13th this year. So I just want to say that that's in my space right now, and I'm just so grateful to have you on the show tonight. To say to everybody listening, you know, there's no time like right now to put this philosophy into your life, implement it into your moment-by-moment experience, and to just allow yourself more and more time every day to feel good inside. And this book can really help you do that. And, you know, I don't mean to sound like a commercial. I just want to tell you, Gay, that reading this book and going through it has given me a lot of comfort during this time, and I want all the listeners to really, really pay attention to these things that we're going to talk about tonight, because you got one shot to get it right in this lifetime, and you chose to be in this physical body. So, you know, if you don't go for it and get outside your comfort zone, then, you know, there's really no one to blame. And the one who makes up your mind for how your life will go is you. So thank you for indulging me there, Gay. I appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that, because I have those kind of thoughts after my mother passed away, too, that some of the things that, you know, that I didn't even think of and wasn't even aware of until after she passed away, I wish that we could go back and have conversations that were based on things I learned since she died. And I appreciate you being open to and letting all parts of the process unfold within you, because there's a lot of value, a lot of great learning that can be enjoyed there too, that'll, you know, make a big difference in your life.
Right, right. And, you know, I wanted to just say that as well, because, you know, I'm so distracted by her passing and all the things that you think about, because now, you know, as my husband mentioned, he said when his father and mother go, when they pass on, he will no longer have that filter, that cushion that is between him and them. So, you know, it's like it's on and it's on you when your parents pass away, and you are very much on your own and very much a grown-up then. And it's time to really start evaluating your own life and how you can, you know, honor your parents by mastering what they didn't and what they were hoping that you could become. And I'm just, you know, I find that I'm very distracted this week. And I put an empty carton back in the refrigerator after I ate my salad. So I'm doing little things like that. And I know getting you on the show tonight, I gave the wrong phone number to the station. And I was like, what's going on here? And, it was me. And, you know, and I need to be okay with that about myself. And I said, you know, when I first got on this call with you, I called it the Great Leap, when actually I wasn't even looking at the book yet. But I want you to know that I fully am paying attention to your wonderful work that you put together so graciously and carefully and consciously for all of us to benefit from. And that said, I think now I've cleared out my basket, and I think we can continue on with this great interview.
Okay.
And now, how did you come up with the book cover?
Well, actually, a friend of mine sent me the image that it was a different type of goldfish and that kind of thing, but I sent it to the publisher, and we started playing around with it, and then we came up with this idea of having the little fish jumping over into the big bowl. And I hope everyone goes to the website. website, we have a special animated version of the goldfish jump.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
And, Hendrix.com.
Yes, Hendrix.com/big leap, all one word,
mm-hmm.
big leap. And that'll take you directly to that page with the animated goldfish on it. But I, everybody that's seen my jumping goldfish has always commented on it and loved it. So, yeah, in you know, it's interesting in life that you really... I appreciate what you said a few minutes ago about you have one shot at this, you know, because I really have always told people to think in terms of looking back over their life from their perspective of their deathbed, mm-hmm. to have a deathbed vision of their life, to actually, in your imagination, go to an imaginary end of your life and look back over your life and ask yourself, what is it, what above all do I wish I had done? And go ahead then and make those changes now to get those things started now so that you don't have any big incompletions on your deathbed.
Wow. You know, that if you could make it a bucket list, actually, and just, you know, the things that you want to accomplish before you pass on could be things that would leave a legacy behind for your having been here. Instead of, you know, go jump out of an airplane, you could actually correct your thinking about yourself.
Yes, and I did that one time when I was in my early 30s. I had a experience of kind of seeing my life from the end of my life and looking back toward the present. And I asked myself, above all, what is the one thing that if I didn't do it during my life, I would feel incomplete? And I was already fairly successful and had written a couple of books and that kind of thing. But what came up for me was the one thing that I really wanted to do with my life is make sure I had a close, loving relationship that would last over time so that we could grow together.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd never experienced that before. I'd had other relationships in my teens and 20s, and they might last two years or 3 years or sometimes 4 years. But I never was in a relationship that grew over time, and so I kind of made my wish right there. I realized, okay, I'm going to put my attention on creating that in my life. And then who should show up in my life a month later but Katie.
Have a Katie.
Yes, her official name is Kathleen, but we call her Katie around the house. Yes.
Wonderful.
And so she came into my life, and zoom, the rest is history. You know, 29 years later, we're still together, and I am just in a relationship that gets more loving and fun every year, more productive. And so I'm a big believer in looking at your life from the end of your life back to now and saying, what is really important for me to focus on?
Yes, and before I lose the opportunity to mention this to you, I would like to tell you that throughout your writing, I felt Katie's support of you.
Oh, uh-huh. Well, thank you. She really emanates support, and she's an amazing human being. I could go on for an hour about her, but she's the most amazing human being I've ever met. She is capable of, at the same time, of being, you know, like... She's co-authored 9 books and then mm-hmm. authored 1 or 2 books of her own, and she's also, you know, been on 500 television shows, and at the same time, she can come home from all that, and she loves, like, to cook Indian food, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, could spend an hour just fine-tuning the spices in a particular meal.
Right.
And so she gives that same quality of loving attention whether she's meeting the President of the United States or chopping vegetables. It's an amazing kind of awareness that she has.
Well, life is holographic. The way you show up in one place is the way you show up everywhere.
Yeah.
That's awesome that you get to have that, and it's awesome that she gets to have you.
Yeah, I've had 29 straight years now of waking up feeling like the luckiest man on earth.
Oh, my gosh. That's wonderful. And you know what? I happen to know personally that every single person listening to this and every person on this planet who sets their mind to it can do just what you did. I did it myself. I am married to the most amazing man in the world. I have my sweetheart husband. We just got married March 22nd at Agape International Spiritual Center by Reverend Michael Beckwith. And we met through the feature film in the book, The Secret, because I have this radio show, and he was a publicist for Rhonda Byrne, We met in 2007, and I thought he was my best friend until one day he said that he was charmed and enchanted by me, and that was a proposal that neither one of us knew was happening at the time. And it's just been the most blessed, so amazing. And I know the richness of what you're speaking about because I am enjoying it. And I like to say, if Michael Wallach, if you're listening, you're next. It's coming. But first, we must sort out how we feel about ourselves. Don't you think, Gay?
Yeah, that's an important thing because a lot of people come into relationship, the way I put it is they kind of hop in on one foot looking for somebody to love them.
Right.
You know, and not realizing that that's an inside job, you know,
yes.
Because if you come into the relationship feeling unlovable about yourself and want the other person to complete you or love you,
mm-hmm.
they're doing a job that you need to do on your own. And,
mm-hmm.
and so that's the kind of person you attract, is the kind of person also who doesn't love themselves. And so it kind of begins like a dog chasing its tail around, both of you trying to get the other one to love something that you can't love in yourself.
Yes, yes. And that's an excellent point, that until you love yourself fully, you will attract people who do not love themselves fully, and it just can't, I mean, dysfunctional relationships can work out in a dysfunctional way. I'm not saying people can't find happiness that way. And if you want what, excuse me for being very blunt, but this is what I declared to the universe I wanted if I ever had a physical relationship again, meaning with a physical mate rather than just go about life, you know, being girlfriend to the universe and raising consciousness any way that I can without a physical partner. I just made sure that I became my own beloved and took myself on dates and bought myself flowers and knew that it was an inside job and that whatever I brought to my former relationships was my half of the problem. And I did learn to become my own beloved. And I wrote an article called No Sex in the City, because what I was looking for was beyond physical. It was beyond the earth plane. It's something I call a high-frequency mental orgasm 24 hours a day. And what I mean by that is where you are such the vibrational match to your partner that you set one another up to win and you're in an upward spiral at all times, and both of you take responsibility for keeping that upward spiral in place by telling the truth to one another and getting issues out of the way as they come up and not letting them fester, because life happens and things come up, and if you don't talk about it, it could be the death of it. And unless you're strong enough and willing enough to risk vulnerability to that level to be with someone and they love themselves enough to allow that as well, it will be like a dog chasing its tail, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And the only solution to that is when things come up in a relationship to learn to love yourself so that you're not demanding the other person to do it for you.
Yes.
And it actually changes the physics of the relationship in the sense that if you have two people in the relationship who are going about the business of loving themselves, it creates a great space in the relationship for a huge kind of mutual love to develop in the relationship.
And it expands in the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
It sends out a giant frequency that can be felt everywhere. Everything is energy. So I really want to ask you this question, Gay, about breaking addictions to get to your zone of genius. That just seems like, for me, it's such common sense that you would need to do that because, you know, addictions cause you to sabotage yourself and your best efforts. So would you mind expounding on that a bit for our listeners?
Yes. Addictions are one of the most, if not the most, common upper limit problem.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that works is that people will get to a place of feeling good and then will take a drink or will eat too much or will start an argument. There's more things that are addictive than just foods and drinks and things like that. A lot of people are addicted to conflict, for
mm-hmm.
example.
Mm-hmm.
They can't actually feel alive without conflict in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And so whatever the addiction is, that becomes an upper limit behavior, so that you get to feeling good and then you drink too much or eat too much, or you get to feeling a flow of love in the relationship and then you start to criticize or berate the other person.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And all of those things are simply symptoms of the upper limit problem. They're ways we use to bring ourselves back down when we've hit the upper limit of how much love and positive energy we can tolerate.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's got a little stack of upper limit behaviors in there that they use to bring themselves back down. But the real task in life and in relationships is to learn how to extend the amount of time that you're spent enjoying your present experience with yourself and enjoying your present experience with the other person,
mm-hmm.
to actually begin to extend those periods of time, to make a living, heartfelt, sincere commitment to extending the period of time that you enjoy the flow of positive energy in yourself and in your relationships.
Mm-hmm. Wow. You know, that takes a lot of courage, even if it sounds, you know, wacky to say that. It takes a lot of courage to allow that kind of good feelings for a prolonged period of time. I know for people who are drama addicts, they don't even know that they are. People who are addicted to chaos and, like you said, conflict, for them to feel harmony and to feel goodness and self-love would be like sitting in a tub of boiling oil. Truly. And to get yourself to the place where you get comfortable with being uncomfortable is a good place to start. And oh my gosh, if you just start now from wherever you are, you're going to get there eventually. If you just have one healthy behavior a day, if that's all you can tolerate, you're so worth it.
I agree. And, it doesn't take much to really turn your life around. I wouldn't be here without an experience I had when I was in my late 20s, where I, for the first time, felt love, unconditional love for myself rather than rejection or hatred.
Mm-hmm.
And all it took was just a second or 2 seconds of that.
Mm.
And everything changed.
Yes.
You know, because it didn't matter if it was 99-1, it was just an experience that suddenly changed everything.
Right, right. And, you know, it's, if you hadn't have done that, we wouldn't get to enjoy your bodies of work.
I totally agree. I think it turned on something in there that, you know, a kind of a faucet of creativity or something that has basically run nonstop ever since.
Well, you've connected to Creator.
Yeah.
And you're just completely connected to Source Energy. And your work and reading this book, The Big Leap, it's just anybody can get something out of it. It doesn't matter what your station in life is. It's so comprehensive and so easily digested. And one thing that I really appreciate is what you say about Bonnie Raitt, how she visualized seeing herself get a Grammy, and that was within the topics of addiction. So I'm sure our listeners would really enjoy hearing your personal experience of Bonnie, anything you'd feel comfortable sharing, being this is Spiritual Hollywood.
Yes. Well, she's one of the most amazing human beings I've ever met. I'm never good at remembering how I originally met people. It always sort of blends together. But I've probably known Bonnie for about 20 years, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't know this, but her earlier career, when she was struggling a lot with addictions, she was quite a successful blues musician, but it was, you know, it's kind of a small genre where you, you know, oftentimes would have to go to clubs and that kind of thing to hear her, you know, not, mm-hmm. not in a stadium or an arena like she plays in now. And so once she unhooked herself from the addictions and really did some conscious visualization of where she wanted to go in her life, things just took off amazingly. You know, like she created a new kind of album that wasn't in the blues genre. It was, you know, a more of a mainstream pop album, which was called Nick of Time.
Right.
Which had a lot of her great hits on it. And but suddenly, you know, here was this whole new side of her coming to light. And I think it had a lot to do with overcoming her own upper limit problem that she had been kind of using the addictions and things like that to hold herself back from expressing her full potential.
Well, a lot of people feel guilty, like they're betraying their families when they become more successful than their family ever was. Don't you think that there's a lot of that going on, too, with people? A loyalty issue?
Yes, there is. In fact, I've worked with hundreds of people that were holding themselves back from their full success because they were afraid that if they allowed themselves to really shine and go to their full success, it would be somehow being disloyal to earlier people in their life. You know, that like one of my clients was the first person in his family to graduate from college, and he found himself in life holding himself back and not really enjoying it as much because he felt disloyal by being, you know, successful because nobody else in the family was.
Right.
And so, yeah, that becomes a big thing, especially as you get a little bit further along in life in your 30s and 40s and find more success. Suddenly you find yourself wondering if you're leaving behind your roots. And
What you said earlier, though, wouldn't you say that to the listeners, would this be true, that if they could just acknowledge that maybe that's what's going on with them or it could be what's going on with them, and then in a meditation of, let's say, even 5 minutes in the morning or 1 minute in the morning, just experience themselves enjoying their success and inspiring their family to know that they, too, can break through and take a big leap? Wouldn't that be a place for someone going through that issue to begin turning that around and then start just, like, you suddenly embraced yourself and stopped judging yourself and started loving yourself unconditionally, and it changed your whole life? And if a person were to use your methods of how you accomplished that for yourself and apply it towards this loyalty issue with family, I believe the same kind of turnaround would be possible, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would. Yeah, it's very important to shine a flashlight on your past and look at it, but not important to spend much time analyzing it. What's important is to get the message of the past and then decide what you want now. You know,
yes.
Put your attention on the present and
yes.
What you can create now in your life.
Yes, and when you're driving your car, you can see about 20 yards ahead of you, and that's all you need to think about at a time in life, is what you can see in front of you, and that keeps you present. And what I'm seeing is if you don't go within, you're going to go without, and that's one of my Katie-isms, and you and I both know that's true, and many people listening wouldn't be listening to this show if they didn't know that was true, too. So would you mind, Gay, just walking us through a meditation that you would use for yourself on the issue of the loyalty factor of succeeding beyond what your family has done? What would that look like? Just if you could just, whatever comes to mind, whatever your knower says, just if you would share that with us.
Sure. Well, one thing I do is I invite the person to softly say out loud and then later in their mind a new idea that replaces the old limiting idea. So, for example, if the person is working with this fear of that they can't be successful because it would be disloyal to be successful, I might have them say the sentence in their mind, I expand to my full success while receiving the full support of all my family and friends.
Mm.
So I have them just say that idea softly, just mm-hmm. repeat it softly to themselves. And after a minute or two, what will happen is that new idea will bring to the surface whatever the old fear or limitation is.
Mm-hmm.
So by saying the new idea over and over again a few times, up will come some old issue. Well, let me give you an example just from noon today. I was working with a couple
mm-hmm.
here, and he was stuck around an idea that I was helping him work on. A new idea would be that I can enjoy my success fully.
Mm-hmm.
Because what would happen is he's the only person in his family who has ever really made a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he finds himself not enjoying it very much because if he really enjoyed it, it would be disloyal to his blue-collar family.
Right.
And so I was having him kind of softly say to himself with his wife watching, she was working on another issue, but we would kind of go back and forth between the both of them. And so I had him just say out loud a few times that I enjoy my full success and enjoy the full support of my family. That was the idea.
And that would be what you call an ultimate success mantra?
Yes, yes. And having him say that over and over again then suddenly brought up this feeling in him. And he started to cry a little bit. Mm-hmm. And we said, "What's going on, Carl?" And mm-hmm. he said that he had just had this memory of graduating from high school and, you know, with a distinguished average. And his father came up to him at the graduation ceremony, you know, after he'd come off the stage and said, "You know, I'm so proud of you, son. I would have given anything to be able to graduate from high school."
Wow.
You know, so in the same moment, he said he was proud of him, but also, you know, this thing that just made Carl feel so guilty and and kind of small at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And his dad didn't even know.
He didn't know. And so that memory came up. And so I just had him acknowledge it and take a few easy breaths and then go back to saying that mantra. And what that does is gradually kind of flush out everything that's in the way of that new idea taking over and becoming the dominant idea in your life.
Right. And you know what I'm hearing here is that block that Carl had was almost undetectable because it landed as a compliment, as a congratulations. So it was a congratulations, or actually it was a almost a shaming and guilt inflicting comment wrapped up in a congratulations, which makes it almost undetectable. And do you find in your work, Gay, with people that they have blocks when you're doing this wonderful mining for gold? And I believe the blocks are the gold that you're mining, because once you exhume them, then they're out of you and they're exposed and they're in your awareness where you could do something about them. Do you find that lots of these blocks are just almost undetectable, which are so, I mean, a person could go through their lifetime and not figure out that was a block without your help or someone's help?
Well, I think that's really true. I appreciate you pointing that out, because a lot of people will actually argue, you know, that they have a certain limitation.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think there's something, maybe some of us feel threatened if we admit that we have a fault, or if mm-hmm. we admit we have some kind of a thing that needs correction.
Mm-hmm.
There's a fear there that comes up for people. I think that in life is always giving us the opportunity to unwind whatever the belief system is. It keeps giving us the opportunity over and over again. And if we don't get it the first time, if we don't unwind the belief system the first time, there will come another thing and another thing and another thing. And unfortunately, though, what happens is life seems to offer us, at first, tries to tickle us with a feather to mm-hmm. teach us something, you know. But if we're not paying attention,
yep.
then it'll turn to a sledgehammer.
Oh, yes.
A freight train. Yeah. And what I'm trying to help people do a lot in their lives is help them get the message while it's still being a feather tickle, rather than having to wait for the freight train to hit.
I call that raising bottom.
Yeah, raising bottom. That's a great phrase.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's like, God bless us all. You know, this journey that we're on called life is, it's, you know, it's all an illusion in the first place. And I say that in the sense that I know you know what I'm talking about, Gay. When I say it's an illusion, it's like everything is based on our own personal perception, and a lot of our perceptions were molded and set out, the table was set for us before we were born to step right into someone else's illusion and perception, and we took it on as our own, and we stepped right into a bunch of boxes. And there are even boxes that we're in that are boxes where we have excellence in them and we get great results, but they're still boxes and they still have limits to them. They might have great results for other people, but for you personally, you're not really stretching and growing because you get great results just by doing your average thing in that excellence box. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. In fact, a lot of my time when I'm working with people is spent helping them get out of their excellence box and into their genius box.
Absolutely. That's the key.
Yeah, because a lot of people stall out in their excellence or burn out in their excellence. They're doing things that they're excellent at, but it doesn't really challenge and stretch them to bring up their full measure of genius.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say I spent 90% of my coaching time over the past year encouraging people and showing them how to jump out of that zone of excellence into that zone of genius where they're fully using themselves at their highest capacity.
Right, and there are four barriers to the zone of genius. Would you mind telling our listeners what those are?
Yes, they're basically four false beliefs that keep people out of the zone of genius. One of the false beliefs is if I expanded to my full potential, I would, as we mentioned before, have to be disloyal to or leave somebody behind.
Mm-hmm.
A second one is a false belief that if I were to expand to my full potential and really be in my genius, that somehow that would be more of a burden on the world.
Mm.
A third one has to do with if I expanded to my full genius, if I really went all the way, I'm afraid I shouldn't do that because I'm afraid of outshining somebody else or making people feel bad with the display of my genius.
Right, right.
And an ultimate one has to do with the feeling that one is fundamentally flawed or somehow fundamentally bad or wrong inside. And so the idea there, the false belief is, if I expanded to my genius, I would reveal my flaw even more in the world. And if I expanded my genius, I really can't do that because I am fundamentally flawed and I don't deserve success.
Right. As a talent manager, I've been doing this in the entertainment industry for almost three decades. And I've seen a lot of actors who reach that place of they just can't get beyond a certain point, and then that's where, as a progressive talent manager, I come in and I work with them as a mentor to help them get beyond that. And, you know, I think you would agree that one of the greatest traits of a billionaire is a ferocious curiosity. And I have a ferocious curiosity about how great I can be. And I bump up against this loyalty issue about family. I bump up against my own issues about not accepting certain things that I perceive as flaws in myself, which are actually not flaws at all. They're actually some of the best parts about me. And yet someone else's perception in my life somewhere has caused me to think of them as flaws. And I bump up against all of these false beliefs and barriers just like everybody else does. And one thing that keeps me striving to get past all of them is the ferocious curiosity of how much I can get out of this life that I have stepped into that I chose before I was born. So, you know, a book like yours and a philosophy like yours that you actually walk your talk and you live by is such a wonderful inspiration in our world, and especially during these times where everything's so uncertain. And what you're basically asking people to do is embrace uncertainty and have fun and don't take it all so seriously and have some levity about your foibles and your idiosyncrasies and maybe find them as a blessing. Just for 1 minute a day, look at whatever you think your flaw is as a blessing for 1 minute a day and see what happens. I mean, what do you have to lose? Right?
I love it. That's wonderful. I appreciate particularly, Katie, what you were saying about curiosity, ferocious curiosity. One of my favorite quotations, I have an autographed picture of Albert Einstein here on the wall that my wife gave
me. I know your wife gave you that.
Yeah, and one of my favorite quotations from Albert Einstein is, never lose a holy curiosity.
Mm.
I love that because if you really think about it, at the very essence of what makes life great is wonder and curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being able to kind of explore things as a curious and wonder-filled experience.
A beginner's mind.
Yeah. I love that aspect of life. And
yeah.
To me, being able to inquire into something and wonder about something is so much fun that I can't believe how many people on our planet settle for thinking they know something.
Yeah. I know what you mean. the smartest person in the world will be the one that says, I don't know anything about anything. I'm here
right.
to learn.
Yeah. And God help us from people that think they know how things are, how things ought to be, or mm-hmm. who God is, and that kind of thing.
Yep, yep. So, you know, one of the things that it talks about in your book is your experience with Bill Clinton. And I'm just wondering if you would like to talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, the key thing is that the key lesson that I think we all ought to learn from that whole experience is the value of simply being honest about simple things. Like, mm-hmm. it's a very simple thing to ask, did you have sex with that woman? and it's a very simple thing to say, yes.
Right.
But the moment you don't do that, look what spins out of that. That one little 10-second moment that became a year-long $50 million messy kind of a thing that people still have, you know, emanations from.
Yes.
And so I saw that as a huge upper limit problem.
Yes, and with Bill Clinton.
With Bill Clinton, because mm-hmm. he got to the place where he had accomplished his great goal in life. Mm-hmm. And what's next after accomplishing your great goal in life? Well, if you're smart and conscious, what's next is enjoying more of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what's next, is just enjoying it completely in an unblemished, timeless way.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've got the upper limit problem holding you back, what you will do is enjoy it very briefly and then find some way of sabotaging it so that you don't have a good experience of it.
Yes, and I see that all the time, every day. And one way that a person sabotages their goodness and their greatness and the things that are finally starting to show up in their life that they've been wanting all along, and then they start sabotaging, like with accidents and injuries, and those are also blocks to the zone of genius, aren't they?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I would say most illness and many accidents are exactly because of the upper limit problem.
Mm.
That a person has either just made a big expansion into a new zone of positive energy,
right.
or they're about to and are afraid of it. And so what happens is they get sick or have an accident, and that pushes them back down below their thermostat setting where they had the thermostat too low.
Right. And I believe that it would be very mindful and conscious of a person. You know, I believe personally that one of the ways you can love yourself, as we were talking about earlier, is prevention of injury and accidents and protection from injury and accidents, where you're loving yourself to the point where you're going to keep yourself healthy and whole no matter what. Right?
Yes, absolutely. And let that be your commitment, you know, to make an actual commitment to having yourself whole. And well, the way I put it is, I would like from, there are many times in life that you learn from negative, painful experiences, but you could have easily learned the same lesson in some kind of much gentler way.
Oh, yes.
So, for example, when I'm on an airplane, if it's bumpy weather or something like that, I might murmur what I call my airplane prayer, which is, may I learn any lessons I need to learn from the crash of this airplane by wisdom rather than experience.
I love that. I think you just cured me of my issues, because I was on a plane for 15 hours recently, and that was an awful long time to trust somebody else to fly that plane. Boy,
well,
that's a good one.
Well, just remember the airplane prayer then.
I will. Thank you for that. And, you know, I mean, if you weren't practicing yourself prevention and protection, Gay, how would your wife feel about that?
Prevention and protection.
Yeah, how would your wife feel about you not taking good care of yourself?
Oh, I see what you mean.
Preventing yourself from accidents and injury.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's not just you you're talking about. It's your whole life and the world that you created for yourself. You're keeping yourself protected from, you know, from injury and accidents, for as well as your own well-being. So it's not just all about you. It's about people who love you, too. But until you love yourself fully, you don't even really believe anybody else actually loves you. You just think they're lying or faking or pretending or, oh, thanks, you're sweet. But now I know really the truth. That's the kind of committee in your head that keeps you sabotaging yourself, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, a lot of times I can remember before I really had that experience of loving myself, when people would try to love me, I would think, I would confuse it with, the, I would think they were just trying to make me feel good or something like that.
Yeah.
But once I had that experience of really loving myself, I realized, oh, this is kind of possible to actually let love in, you know, to really just let it in and let it circulate through me.
Mm-hmm.
See, I think that we define ourselves basically by either our resistance to love or our openness to love.
Mm-hmm.
And that if we resist and resist and resist, that causes us to go deeper and deeper into fear.
And despair.
And yes, and at some point, hopefully in that fear and despair, you catch a little ray of light or find a moment of being able to love and accept yourself and turn in the opposite direction and move toward that direct experience of more love and light in your life.
Nature is a good way to do that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Nature. National parks, oh, man, I can't get enough. That's where God is. I mean, for a lot of people, nature is really what gives them a sense of their own divinity. And, you know, they don't even know it when they're doing it. And if you were to quiz them about it, you know, as a coach like you are, you're great at exhuming little bits of information from people and revealing to them their greatness. And, you know, also revealing to them what their blocks might be. And when you get out into nature, you just connect to source without even trying. It's your birthright, and it just takes over, and it just happens by osmosis. So, you know, I get out in nature as often as I possibly can to remind me of where I come from and who I really am and what I'm doing here. So
me
I think
too. We have 8 beautiful oak trees on our property here, and one of them is over 350 years old. The local arborist told me that it was over 350 years old, you know, which means that, you know, it was here before the United States was here. And
isn't that funny?
I love sitting out under that oak tree. It makes me feel so good to sit there and, you know, that I'm being a steward for this oak tree that's going to be here long after I'm gone.
Well, that oak tree is your family.
Yeah.
It is. And we go to visit the sequoias, Kings Canyon, Sequoia National Park. Those trees are 3,500 years old. And the girth of one of those trees, have you seen them?
Are you talking about the one that's up in Northern California?
Yeah, the sequoias, Kings Canyon.
Yeah, I didn't know that there might be more sequoias around the world, but are they only there in Northern California?
I don't know if they're only there, but I know this particular park is above Fresno, and those trees put out such a frequency, oh my gosh. They're the girth of a tree is as big as a building, and they're so tall you can't even see the top when you look up.
Oh,
and
wow.
The oldest one is, I believe, General Sherman, we call it, and it's 3,500 years old. So it was here back when the Egyptians were around. And the one wonderful thing, there's many wonderful things about those trees, and the great metaphor about life about those trees is their bark is made of something like asbestos to where fires can't penetrate it. And the only way that they can procreate or multiply is through a massive forest fire, through drama and trial is the only way that they can multiply. So, you know, it's built into their fabric and their genetic code to have like an asbestos-type bark around them to prevent themselves from being burned down to the ground, because that's the only way that they can multiply. So the metaphor about life would be take your challenges and use them to hone your greatness and to buff that diamond that you are to a shining, shining, brilliant piece of, you know, God's work. And that's what the sequoia trees remind me of, because, you know, we all have our hardships and challenges. It's what you do with them that really makes your life. And if you take whatever's gone on in your life and do something with it, write books, give lectures, coach people, just be kind to people, be of service to people, find a way to use what happened in your life that had been a great challenge, your greatest cross to bear, really, I believe, is our greatest gift if we just perceive it that way.
I very much agree. I think that I have been the beneficiary of a lot of experiences that seemed terrible at the time, but now looking back on them, I feel so grateful for them.
That's a nice way to put it, beneficiary. It's a wonderful way to put it. And you know what? I promised you that our 55-minute conversation would seem like 15 minutes, and yes, we're coming up on the last bit of our Spiritual Hollywood Hour. And what I would like to do is ask you one important thing for our listeners. I get a sense for what people want to know, and that's what guides me. This one is about worry being another barrier to the zone of genius. What can you say about that in the next couple of minutes?
Well, most of the things that people worry about are not based on anything that they actually need to worry about. You know, like, for example, if you're sitting in a room and a blanket catches fire, that's something you need to worry about because you need to take an immediate action. But if you notice, most of the things, worry thoughts in your mind, are not about things that you could take any action about. They might be things that happened 50 years ago, or they might be things that are not going to happen until next year. But we go around worrying about these things that we have absolutely no control over. And why do we do that? Well, the reason we do that is because we use worry as an upper limit behavior when we want to make ourselves feel bad. So notice next time you find yourself worrying, kind of look back over the preceding minute or two and ask yourself, was I feeling really good, or were things really going on well in my relationship? And then I started worrying.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I catch myself doing that, too, because, you know, I'm in my process, and God's not done with me yet. And, you know, I've been asking myself lately when those things happen to me, who would I be without that thought?
Mm-hmm.
Who would I be without that thought? And then I look at it and take it apart, and I go, oh, that's who I am without that thought. And then I choose not to have that thought. And it's all a process and all an exercise, and I'm just so grateful there are people like you in the world, Gay Hendricks, that are, you know, contributing your many gifts and talents to, you know, enlightening up the world and to bringing consciousness to places that, you know, there isn't much understanding, and there is something going on that just can't be stopped. It's just a consciousness that's happening in the birth of our children. You see, you know, indigo children and star children and all kinds of evidence of where we're headed. And you certainly are very, very masterfully riding that wave of consciousness on that beautiful surfboard that you've created for yourself called your life. And I just want to thank you for that profusely and let you know that we have about 45 seconds left in our Spiritual Hollywood Hour. So thank you, Gay. I truly hope that I've honored you to the level that you certainly deserve, and I appreciate your time and your energy and your ginormous heart. And your website is www.hendricks.com. That's H-E-N-D-R-I-C-K-S.com. And is there anything you want to say that's just like something unsaid that might be bursting to come out?
Oh, well, thank you so much. You're obviously in your zone of genius, and thank you for sharing your gift with the world. It's a great gift to all of us.
Oh, my goodness. I did not expect that. Thank you so much, and I humbly accept that. Thank you so much. And I just want to remind all our listeners that the last six letters of attraction are action. And if this interview did not inspire you into action, then I don't know what will. So just remember, you've got one shot at this, so go for it, because it's your birthright. So thanks again, Gay, for being with me this evening, and all of the listeners, and we'll see you next week. Good night, everyone.
All right, thanks.